Welcome to the Zai Lab podcast series on e-discovery and information management technology. My name is Evan Wiesel, and in this episode I will interview Dr. Jan Schultes on the importance of having a solid and defensible methodology when you bring e-discovery in-house. Jan, welcome.
Hello, Evan. Nice to be here. How are you?
We appreciate your time. Let's do a little bit of level setting for the next couple of minutes before talking about the importance of methodology. My first question is, why should an organization consider bringing e-discovery in-house, and what are some of the benefits of doing so?
We actually see three main reasons why organizations, both the government and commercial organizations, are interested in bringing e-discovery in-house. The first is very clearly is reducing costs and controlling the risks for the current legal matter, but also for future litigation. What we've seen in many cases is that the bill that one can expect to receive for the legal review from an external law firm is often proportional with the amount of documents that are handed over in an e-discovery process. It means that if you give them double the amount of documents, your bill is very likely to double as well. So the more relevant documents you can justifiably filter out before you turn over your documents for the legal review, the lower your external legal bill will be. And this is mainly what organizations try to achieve when they bring e-discovery in-house. Now, a second objective, which more and more organizations are also seeing as a very clear benefit, is that if you do have access to all of the documents, and if you do have processed and bring that e-discovery in-house, you can also do a more cost-effective and more thorough early case assessment before all the documents are reviewed. As you may know, only 3% of all cases goes to court. 97% of all cases are actually settled before they go to court. And it's absolutely essential to obtain a favorable settlement. It's absolutely essential that you do have access to all your information and that you know where your legal risks are, how liable one really is. And by having all of the documents searchable with a powerful and exploratory search engine, Zyla provides, this goal can be achieved rather simply. Now, the third and final objective we see more and more, but this is like really with people that have had several e-discovery cases and are very experienced and try to kind of really solve the source or get rid of the source of all of these problems, is that they develop and implement a method to reduce the overall information overload in an organization by implementing what we think really is the only final solution, proper records and information management principle. So that means repurposing, transferring, and destroying information according to proper retention schedules, filing plans, which are also called data maps, and implementing proper information governance and reducing your overall information overload in order to reduce all of your future e-discovery exposure.
Well, great. Thanks, Jan. Those are all good reasons for bringing e-discovery in-house. For the purpose of today's discussion, let's hone in on that last objective that you just mentioned, which is to follow a documented and repeatable methodology for handling e-discovery. Talk to us about why that's so important.
Yes, it's very important if you bring e-discovery in-house that you have a well-documented and a repeatable methodology. The reason is that every day there's more and more case law on parties which are sanctioned for data spoliation or scrutiny of process, rules, and methodologies are therefore really, really important. Because if you don't follow these rules and if you cannot reproduce or defend against opposing counsel, because you can bet that opposing counsel will challenge what you're trying to do, it will be you are more vulnerable for acquisitions of data spoliation or doing things wrong. And before you know, you get a sanction or you're being sent back to redo all the work that you do. It's very important to leverage audit reports and to implement quality control mechanisms so you know exactly who did what and when. It's also very important to know what you do with your information. You know exactly how your tools work. For instance, you must be able to explain in court how your search tools worked, what data was searched, what data could not be searched, how did you process PDF, how did you work with zip files, etc., etc. Because at the end of the day, your legal counsel and your legal counsel may not be the most technical skilled person on the planet, or he definitely doesn't have a PhD in computer science, but your legal counsel must be able to defend your processes in court against objections from the opposing counsel. And therefore, it is very important that you keep that in mind when you bring e-discovery in-house and that you actually do have a methodology and quality control procedures and you document everything you do in a easy to understand way, and that you also use technology which is very easy to understand, and preferably also use technology which has a lot of existing case law, so you can also refer to this existing case law and help that in order to defend what you've been doing.
Okay. Well, why don't we do a bit of a deeper dive for our listeners and walk them through the specifics on how to develop a correct methodology. In other words, you know, how do you do this right?
Yeah, no, we at Xylab have such a methodology, and it's actually based on a number of pretty simple principles. First of all, it is very important to use best practices, and those best practices need to be based on the steps of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. So you should take the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure first, then you should follow best practices as these are proposed by the EDRM model, which can be found at www.edrm.net from the EDRM organization and also the Sedona conference. The next step is to document collections very well in detail from paper, hard disks, email server, and other sources. You should not only document the number of documents, but also the location, the date collected, the files, the sizes, the dates, and all kind of other relevant meta information. And you should also hash all of your data to be able to prove that your files haven't been changed. Now, when you start processing documents, and you want to remove documents because they are not relevant, you have to document why you want to remove them. You know, you have to document which ones are duplicates, how many, what sizes, how duplicate are they? Are they just duplicates because they have the same attachments? Is the entire email duplicate? Is the meta information duplicate? Is it data that you recovered from a backup tape? Which files, for instance, do not match the negotiated Boolean? Which ones are found in compound files like zip files or databases or other entities that you ran into during the processing? How did you process zip files? How did you process PDFs? Did you detect non-OCR or non-searchable bitmaps or non-searchable PDFs? Did you make them searchable? If you use a full-text query to trim your review set down, you should show the queries, document the results, and show not only that you've been searching for incriminating queries, but also used queries that show that the other party is not guilty, or vice versa, if you're defending yourself, that the other party is guilty. You can also use content analytics, concept search, and other advanced technology. But if you do, you must be able to explain how they work in court in layman terms. So if you want to automatically detect privileged documents or confidential documents, or you want to link documents to claims, you have to explain to court how you did it. You must also show that you did some sampling to actually prove that whatever automatic process you used is like for 95 or whatever the percentage is that the judge will accept accurate. And you shouldn't worry too much about this, because in general human beings have a typical quality rate of maximum 80%. That means that human beings, if you do better than 80% quality, you are often doing better than human reviewers, because you shouldn't underestimate the differences and the inconsistencies that human reviewers or large review teams often make, because Monday morning they often take completely different decisions than on Friday afternoon, and there's a lot of scientific research and evidence of that. like I said before, you must be able to refer to existing or, if needed, international case law. That really helps you to defend the technology that you're using. You must be able to explain how you handled foreign languages. You know, did you process Chinese files or German files or French files? And are you able to search on characters with which are diacrits or characters with special annotations on it? Did you use wildcard searches or fuzzy searches? And if you did execute them, did you build them by hand, or did you use a dictionary, or did you investigate all of the random distributed possibilities? Did you find deliberate misspellings? You know, all these things are going to be important because that's what you're going to be challenged about. When you start to review documents which are privileged, responsive, non-responsive, confidential, you have to document everything. And you have to have reports which documents fit in with the category and how they got there. And when you produce, for instance, when you generate TIFF files or you want to do redaction, you should show how did you produced spreadsheets, or if there's an MP3 file, you know, you cannot make a TIFF file from an MP3 file. How did you process those type of files? Now, all of these things you will have to document and you will have to be able to do. If you didn't, and opposing counsel is getting smarter and smarter every day, you will get fines, penalties, and sanctions. You have to be able to explain and document every step in the process, and you have to justify every file, when and how you collected it, and also why you did not disclose it to the other party if you don't disclose it, and for what reason. And then, you know, the really smart thing to do is to make e-discovery part of a daily operating procedure. And that's what we are recommending everybody to do, and that's where we can help with a lot of examples and best practices.
Well, great, Jan. That's some fantastic insight. You got into a lot of the items in that last part of the discussion. Maybe you can quickly recap it at kind of the 10,000-foot level, kind of the most basic in terms of providing us in the most basic of terms what defensible methodology involves.
Yeah, no, most important is to do not depend on what George Sosha from EDRM called faith-based e-discovery. Stay away from there. You must use the polar opposite. You must have a repeatable process in place for handling any and all of your e-discovery data. You should follow a proper chain of custody. You should ensure data isn't destroyed or altered in the process. You should ensure the right people are involved in the process, and you ensure that you got everything. And if a judge requires it, you should easily recreate your steps to demonstrate how and why you retrieved the information you collected and presented and disclosed to the court.
Great. Seems very logical. My last question, and it may be a bit leading, but I quickly want to touch on what organizations should be looking for in a vendor beyond just a product.
Yeah, first of all, you should have a vendor which will help you to have access to methodologies, to properly implement the solution, perform complex tasks and processing as part of the e-discovery, and also prove, of course, like I said several times before, that your actions are defensible, auditable, recorded, and repeatable. You should look for proven methodologies that have been developed in close cooperation with intelligence, law enforcement, law firms, and forensic accounting organizations and other mission-critical projects, because these people knew what had to be done and they have experience. And this is also the final point. You should look for vendors that can refer to existing international, if needed, case law, because that will help you tremendously in your case if any party challenges the technology that you used.
Well, great. Jan, that's some great insight. It's clear that that if you bring e-discovery in-house and you do it wrong, then your organization may end up spending more money than it'd like to. So
absolutely.
So that said, if our listeners want to get more information on this topic, they can certainly visit the website, www.zilab.com. They can follow us on Twitter, which is at Zilab. And certainly, if they want to share this podcast That link is on our website at zylab.com/podcast26. Thanks for your time today, John.
Yep, take care.